Good evening. Welcome to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Evan and I'm an alcoholic.
Evan.
For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, if you'll please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we're on step four, part one, and I'm going to read the paragraphs starting on page 63, and I believe it's at the very bottom of 63. Bottom sentence. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. And I didn't introduce our guests tonight. We have Judy and Patrick at the mic tonight. Or I'm sorry, Debbie. Debbie and Patrick tonight. So Debbie, I'll hand over the mic to you.
I'm sure Judy's here in spirit. She's working. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
Simple Actions is my home group. This is where we are tonight. My sobriety date's October 24th, 1982. And I believe I'm sober through the grace of God tonight and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, you know, there's a lot of new people here tonight, so it's kind of hard to just jump right into step four. So I'd like to go back a little bit to step one, two, and three briefly, because there's like seven readings tonight, and I do want to get to the solution. So, you know, step one, I admitted I was an alcoholic and my life was unmanageable and powerless over alcohol. I have no power. Lack of power. And step two is all about that power and trying to find that power. And step three is the biggie, you know, that's where some action starts, that I have to turn my will and my life over the care of this power. And it talks about abandon myself utterly to him. And utterly means a lot, 100%. It means completely. And that's a real hard thing for me to do when I'm coming into these rooms and I don't even believe God has anything to do with me. And so what I know today, and I'm gonna talk a little bit, I might lose some of you, sorry, but I'm gonna talk a little bit about what it's like to be sober for a while, because I know Patrick's gonna do an awesome job about talking about the other. And so it's really hard for me to do these steps if I don't have this power, if I don't believe that something's gonna be with me as I'm going through them. And so what that utterly abandonment is to me is that I'm just willing to go ahead and do this, whether I believe it's going to work, whether I think you have any sense at all, whether I think it's stupid, whether I agree with it, like it, want to do it, I just agree that I'm going to give this a chance, and I'm going to follow these silly directions, and I'm going to make these columns, and I'm going to do what my sponsor suggested that I do. So I just bring a little bit of willingness to the table, and then we'll hop into this step four.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Patrick Lanier. I'm an alcoholic.
Patrick.
My sobriety date is May 1st, 2009. My home group's the Principals Group of Chesapeake. I guess we can start off here. First, you know, I hear in a lot of meetings people are wondering about time frames on when they should do a fourth step. And I hear a lot of different things. Some people say a step a year. Some people say 6 months. I hear a lot of different things. The Big Book, to me, states something clearly here. It gives me two references to time. It says next, and then over on the next page, it says immediately. Right, mate, don't want to switch the words up here. Just want to make sure, immediately, and next. So anywhere in between there, feel free to do it. But that's what it says. And with me, people can say what they want, but this book saved my life. So I try to stick to what it says. I don't need to change it around too much. So immediately and next. And I like how it also tells me that though my decision was vital and crucial, it's not going to have a permanent effect. Well, what was that decision? And that's what she was talking about. And that's where I start to get introduced that my life had been run by self, and that I can't do this thing on the self train. I need to get some God going. So I make a decision to turn my life over to God. But it isn't really going to matter, you know. I hear a lot of people talk to me all the time about, yeah, I made it to step three. And I'm like, really? You made it to step three? Because I don't believe, truth of mine is that I can't make it to step three without going to step four. I can't make a decision and go out there and work for God if I'm not willing to clean up my past. Let's see. What you were saying about the columns, too. I've heard a lot of different things on four steps. And, you know, it shows me columns here. And I was always taught that columns go up and down, never across. Though those are sentences. I might be crazy, but that's something I learned. It's up and down. You know, I don't want to go too far here. But with that, I think that's good to start. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. We're going to get to that solution. So we're going to continue on to page 64. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about the values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Debbie?
Okay, so what, you know, every time I read this book, something different kind of jumps out at me, and I have to share this little story, because last Saturday I was not having a spiritually fit day. I wanted my mother dead, my husband gone, and AA could just go away. And so what I did was what I've been taught to do from the get-go in this, you know, go to a meeting, talk to my sponsor, get on my knees and pray. And so Saturday was not a fun day, and so I came to my home group Monday, and, you know, here's my sense of humor with God, is David says, hey, want to talk on step four Monday night? And I had my notepad in my car from Saturday, because that's what I'd been directed to do. And so I said, I can do that. I can do that. So I've done step four a couple of times, but what I will recommend not doing is the way I did it first time, which was I sponsored myself, I did it myself, I bought the book, I got the guides, I was a nursing student, I know how to do a paper, you know, and so I had the whole schmeal out there, and I got drunk, you know, because I didn't want to get sober, and I certainly didn't want to find out the truth about me. And so that's what hit me to this week. It's been a great week. Is discovering the truth, and I'll get into this a little bit later, but what I know today, even as long as I've been coming to this program, is that there are some beliefs that I have that are not true, and I still run my life based on those beliefs, and that's what this fourth step is helping me with right now, and I'll get into more of that later. The other thing is this self manifested in various ways. When I have the beliefs that are untrue, the way I make them work is by self-reliance, you know, because God would say, you're crazy, that's not even true, I'm not going to go there. But I go there because that's what I believe, because I've been telling myself that all my life. And so, you know, I can block this sunlight of the Spirit with a whole lot of ways, with a whole lot of defects that we're talking about here. And what I really know today is that these columns, especially when we get to the solution, is about finding out my defects. Doesn't mean I've got a whole scenario of people that I don't like or I'm pissed at or whatever. It means what's wrong with me in a word or two, not a paragraph. It's like, we'll get to that because I got plenty of them. So anyway, so the truth about myself is still being revealed to me because I have some very deep, very old, very wrong beliefs about myself. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie.
I got some great news for everybody in this room. Some awesome news. And you're going to find it on page 62 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells me right there, so our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. And that is fantastic news to me. Because as long as I'm a victim, as long as it's the judge's fault, the district attorney, all these other people's fault, I'm just going to stay drinking and just live a jacked up life. So I come and I find this out, and why are all these troubles of my own making? Because self is manifested in a bunch of different ways in my life. And it tells me here, you know, it says, first, we searched out the flaws. So I guess I'm a flawed individual. It's not saying, like, we'll see if maybe you have some flaws. It's saying we're going to search out the flaws because you're flawed. Okay, Roger, I am a flawed individual. And, you know, and then it's going to, and then I find out that those flaws or which caused my failure. And it tells me here, any business that's successful, I want to have a successful business. I want to have a successful life. So I'm going to have to search out these flaws that made my failure so I can be successful. There's some other things. You know, something else that I realized here is like self-manifest in different ways. You know, that stuff, it's not really me. I know that sounds crazy, but if it was me, I wouldn't feel guilty about doing it. I wouldn't have to do this fourth step. You know, I'm a spiritual being, I've come to find out. I read that one in my third step, you know, that I'm one of God's kids. And that I'm not, that's not really who I am that does these disgusting, vile things. Because if it was, who cares? Just keep doing it. It doesn't bother me, but it does bother me. Those flaws in my makeup. And so that's what we're about ready to do here. Good.
Thank you. We're going to continue on. Next on 64 still. So resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all form of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite to each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with?
All right, so here comes the columns, and I agree that I was instructed to just go down, list them all. Who am I pissed at? Who do I think I'm better than? You know, what's going on? And certainly the first ones that I did were pretty specific to specific people and specific incidences. And then I'd throw in a couple of the institutions like marriage, you know, that I could have a resentment against that. And what has been happening this week, and it's still a work in progress, so I'm not even sure I'm going to be able to verbalize it, is principles. Because, you know, I said that I wanted my mother, dad, my husband gone, and AA to disappear, and that's really not true, because I love all those people that are involved. But what I didn't love was some of the things that I'm still fighting, and these character defects of unconditional love and acceptance and non-judgment and love and tolerance. And so what has come to me this week is that this basic flaw that I have is that I still don't think I'm good enough. And what that looks like in my behavior is that I either fight or I run. And that's what I've done my entire life. And so it's much more subtle when you're sober for a while, because I've been married for 23 years, I've got a job for 24, I've got a house for 17. Doesn't really look like running, but I'm an expert at running. And what that looks like is I'm not present in my life when that stuff is going on. When I'm not getting my way, when Debbie is relying on herself and not on a power greater than myself, then I start judging. Because if I'm not good enough, then I gotta judge you to know what I'm up against, because I gotta be a little bit better, you know. And what that looks like at work is I'm a nurse. So if I'm supposed to be, you know, there's four nurses that do the same job. So I'm going to pay attention to how many charts you're doing, and if you do 7, I'm going to do 8. Now, I may be able to do 10, but Lord knows I'm not going to get that much better than you. You know, I'm just going to do enough to that I can say, look at me, look how good I am. You know, what that looks like in my marriage is that I'm going to 7 AA meetings a week. I don't need to go to 7 AA meetings a week, but I don't really want to be home, you know, and I'm not cooking dinner and I'm not paying the bills. And that's what running looks like in my life, you know. My mother's in assisted living. I don't want to go visit her on some day. She's been there 4.5 years, and it's emotionally draining. And so what I do is I make sure I go in case my brother and sister, who also go, they might miss a visit. And then I can say, oh, look at me. Look, I'm going all the time. I'm there every week, you know. And so that's what running and fighting looks like in my life today. It's certainly not as exciting or dramatic as it was in my drinking days, but it's very painful. It's very painful, and that's what last Saturday was all about. And so I get this judgment going. I get the isolation going. Number one defense is sarcasm. I've been praying from the first time I walked into AA and started writing. They said, put sarcasm on your list. Anytime you write a list, put sarcasm on your list. Because that's what I do. When I'm afraid, which is the bottom line to all this, which you'll figure out in about 50 years, but fear, I act out. I attack. If I'm afraid, I'm going to attack. I'm not, you know, or I'm going to run. And so that's what I'm doing this week, you know. And so instead of that, self-reliance, what my higher power has chose to do this week is show me some things that you're not going to run from this, Debbie. You're not going to run from this. And it's an amazing thing, and you know, my sponsor tells me I'm being transformed, and I really thought that would be like on a mountain with a guru or meditating, and what it really is crying and slobbering and fighting and, you know, finally surrendering, because my number one thing is defiance. Thanks.
Thanks, Debbie. Thank you. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. It destroys me. Huh, that's nice. Okay, so got that. Number one, doesn't get any worse than that. That's it. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. Oh yeah, and that's one of the few places in the big book where I find the word disease, just in case anyone cared. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, and I love that. Like, first of all, it's telling me right there that the spiritual malady is pretty freaking important, and when I overcome that, then I'm going to straighten out mentally and physically. And so many times in my life, I try to change the equation. I'm like, all right, let's just go to the gym every day to the gym, lose some weight, stop being fat, go to the gym, and like, I don't feel a lot better. And then I'll be like, all right, let's see here. all right, I really need to think about this situation, and, you know, I should probably work a little more and a little less of this, and I try to make all these different equations, and, like, I'll get a little bit of relief, and then I still don't feel that much better. But when I go to the maintenance part, because I've already taken the steps, but when I go back to the maintenance part of this, where it's prayer, meditation, talking to people in the program, intensive work with other alcoholics, oh snap, there we go. I straighten out spiritually, and you know that shows me. But I mean, I'm hard-headed. Probably next week I'll probably try to switch the equation again. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. And I'm going to jump ahead here on page 67. It says black and white. Me and Debbie had a talk about this one night after a meeting. She's talking about composition books. And I was like, oh, I never thought about that because those are black and white. But I do, when I do think about it, I do like to tell the guys that I work with, you know what, grab a black pen, use a white paper. You want to be unique, go to Hobby Lobby and grab black paper and use a white pen. I really don't care, but let's try to follow the exact directions in the book. And so then we set them down on paper. And then it tells me that I ask myself, you know, where was I angry? And I like how it says in most cases, it was found there, self-esteem being number one. When I first did the steps, self-esteem was next to every single thing I wrote down. Why is that? Because I've been writing on self. Don't mess with myself. That's what I do. I do self. I do it great. I love self. And so when you mess with that, that's going to get to the top of my list. Self-esteem. And it's got a little bit over some time. It's gone down a little bit where it's not always self. But it's still there a lot. And that's all I got on this.
All right. Thank you. We're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our monuments of triumph were short-lived.
Yeah, this is my paragraph. You know, I'm a fighter. This is it, you know. When I don't feel good enough, then I got to try harder, you know. And that sentence back there about I've got a rest satisfaction, if I could only manage it better, just give me 10 minutes, I'll figure this out, you know. I gotta have a solution here. I cannot not have a solution, you know. And I say this sometimes, you know, I was a hippie in high school and I prayed for peace, you know, anti-war, and all of my life I've been told to stop fighting. You know, I really don't want peace, I just want to fight, you know. And one thing that I want to say, just if we want to get into specifics, I really like this. If you're a sponsor, talking to a sponsee about the cause, because if you hear enough of these, you'll hear a lot of cause, because that's our favorite column, column two. This is what they did to me. So I've counted, I think the longest one is like 18 words. I've also heard 8 words or less. You know, whatever the actual number is, it's like, less than 20 would cover it, but even less than 10 would be better, because they say some pretty amazing things here in very few words. We don't need all the details. We don't need the scenario. But, you know, David always says, this is the bar. You know, this is column two in the bar. Do you know what they did to me? Do you know what my husband did? Do you know what my boss did? And I love living in column two because I'm real good at that. I'm a martyr, you know. And so I love it when I tried to have my own way, the worst matters got, and yet I keep banging that head against the wall. There's got to be another way. That whole step one, it's always the step one problem. You know, I gave up the alcohol, but the manageability is harder and harder and harder for me to give up. And so my way causes me pain today, so I'm much quicker to give it up, but I don't immediately. My first answer is still no. Especially to God, when that last Saturday when I thought I was hearing what he was saying, my answer was, I can't do that. I don't have enough strength to do that. And so I had to pray for that. I had to pray for that strength and do the things that people were advising me to do. And like I said, it's a process. It's a process. But I know that when I get through it, because it's happened enough now, when the first time is really scary, but it's happened enough times now that I know there's going to be peace at the other side, and that, oh, you'll be able to help somebody. At the moment, I don't care if I can help somebody because it's just not feeling real good, but I know that it's true. And I know that, you know, when I was sitting talking to somebody Saturday and I said, you know, I don't get this sobriety beyond my wildest dreams. I ain't feeling it, you know. And really what that's all about is that I'm sober today and I can't stop drinking on my own. And so I need to not take that for granted. And then after that, by the time we had finished talking and shared a meal, I said, I know that it's back because what brings me joy today is seeing transformation in people like this guy. It's like, it just fills me with joy to see what these steps, when you work them in your life, can do in your life. And often I'm the last to see it in my own life. Thanks.
Thanks, Debbie.
I don't have a lot on this because, like Debbie said, you know, I spent a lot of time in this category. I like how she said that because I was taught that too, that the most, in the cause section, the most words that are written there was 18, 19 words, so I don't need, and what the one that has the most, this is great. Mr. Brown, his attention to my wife, told my wife of my mistress, got me fired. He wants to get my job, and they did that in 19 words. That's pretty serious. Like, I'd kill someone for that, dude. Really, you're gonna rat me out and then take my job? That's pretty deep. It only took them 19 words. And then, you know, it says the first thing apparent was this world and its people were often quite wrong, and to conclude that others were wrong as far as most of us got. So I don't need to spend a lot of time on that because I've spent my whole life on that. That's as far as I get. That dude's wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. And that's all I've ever done. And so, you know, I don't have to spend days on figuring out how they wronged me. And something else that I know, it's been a process, but something else, my sponsor, he's, God bless his heart. But there's been times in sobriety where I've been wronged. And he would tell me to pray for him. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Pray for all the things you want for them. And then he said something else once to me. He said, put myself in their shoes. Am I capable of doing that same wrong to somebody else? Oh, yeah. Way worse. And so, you know, that's helped. Something that I've come to learn is that forgiveness is received. It's something I can't give, you know. God makes that possible. I can't just say, like, I'm going to forgive you, and that's going to happen. If I could do that, then I could have said I'm not going to drink, and that would have happened. I can't do that. But over time, following those simple actions that my sponsor have laid out, it's helped me to be able to do that. That's all I got.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. So moving on to page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentments leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poisonous.
All right. So we know what the problem is. It's all those other people, you know, and I resent them. But they're telling me the answer is the growth and the maintenance of my spiritual experience. So I believe today, I did not believe this for a long time when I got here, but I believe today that I have a spiritual malady. It says so in the book, just didn't believe it, because I didn't want it to be a spiritual solution. And so what I got to get is a spiritual experience, whether I believe that's going to help or not. And how I get that is by doing these steps. And I can not believe any of it and still get that spiritual experience. My first prayers were exactly what they tell me to say. You know, God help me, I'm a drunk. This is Debbie, because I knew he didn't know who I was. And, you know, thank him at night and say, you know, thank you for keeping me sober today. Because for a long time, I thought I was keeping me sober today. That ain't how it works. And so I have this spiritual malady that only a spiritual solution will fix. And if that's not what your problem is, then the steps aren't going to fix it, and you don't have to worry about it. So what I have to know is, am I going to choose my way and my self-will and my self-reliance, or am I going to choose God's grace in my life? You know, the old timers, when I came around, said there will come a time when you can no longer ward off the grace of God. I had no clue what that meant. But I believe that today, because it just, I've had too many instances in my life where there's no other explanation for the way things turn out. You know, so they talk about the sunlight of the Spirit. I love that. I love that phrase. I want God to just throw open the door and show me the happy ending, and then I'll do it. And that's really not how it works, you know. It's pretty much, you do this, Debbie, and we'll see what happens, you know. And so it's a mystery. I don't like mysteries. I'm a black and white girl. Had a sponsee fire me because her therapist said, without even meeting me, she's a black and white girl. You're very gray, so you need to get away from her. So I'm finding that gray doesn't do well for me. I want to know the answer. You know, I can't have a yes or no answer kind of thing. So the other thing that's been revealed to me, and this is not new, it's come up on other four steps, is that I don't trust God. That's why I have to play God. You know, I have to be God, play God in my life, because I really don't trust him. Now, that's not 100% of the day. There are some things that I trust him 100% with, but there are other things that I just keep a hold of, and that's what this is about, is uncovering those things. And what all those things are, that sarcasm and the judgment and the isolation, is how I protect myself, because I need that wall up to protect me from you hurting me, you know. And so when you put that wall down and you let people in and you let compassion into your life, then you're pretty much guaranteed the slobber and the crying and the tears and all that too. But then you also get the joy, which I didn't have either one of those. I didn't cry for probably 35 years. I've done nothing but cry for about 2.5 now. So it's just the way it is. And that's what I'll say. Again, God, really? Really? This is what we're doing again? But, you know. So we had to be free of anger. Yeah, right. Snap my fingers. Yeah, that's a real good one for self-reliance. You know, I can't even count to 10, much less be free of anger. So yeah, but I have a solution today that it gets into later. And I love this, the brainstorm. I had to look that up. A violent, transient fit of insanity, or a moment where one is suddenly unable to think clearly or act sensibly. To me, it's just that just keeps going. I keep replaying what you did to me. I keep replaying what I could have said, should have said, would have said, you know, and it's just that crazy monkey mouse talking in my head that I can't shut up. Thanks.
That's what's up.
Don't feel bad, Debbie. I cried during my cousin Vinny the other day when he won the case. I don't know.
It's all about grit.
I know my girlfriend laughed at me, though. All right, so it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment, and so it's supposed to be easy for me to see that by this time. That's what the first hunter are trying to say to me, that it's easy to see that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. And I heard this speaker once say it was best. He said, do you see people that have deep resentment that are joyous, happy, and free? And I was like, good point. Yeah, that's what's up. And so, yeah, I'm not going to have those things rocking out in my life if I'm full of deep resentment. And then, you know, I go down to the precise extent that we permit these. Sometimes I really like to permit them a lot. Do we squander the hours? My girlfriend tells me, like, when I'm pissed and I'm on my cell phone texting someone, I'm, like, talking while I'm texting, like, mouthing it out. And she's like, what the heck? You're crazy. And there you go. I'm squandering, yo. I'm telling you. I'm in bed. I can't sleep. I'm not sure if it's the pre-workout or that kid that just won't stop 13-stepping. And, like, come on, dude. But who's it affecting? Me? I'm the one that's up. Now it's 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, you know, that's, yeah. So I can definitely understand squandering some hours that might be worthwhile. But with the alcoholic whose hope, my hope is the maintenance, and I already talked about that, and the growth of a spiritual experience, the business of resentment is infinitely grave. Oh, that's nice. I'm gonna die. They're telling me that I'm dead. You know, this book really haven't really come from the gate saying that to me, but in this page, they say it over and over and over again, that I'm gonna die. This is gonna kill me. I think the kill rate on this page is like 7. for me, like, what does the growth mean? The growth is that I have to keep, like, seeking those truths about myself to try to, you know, sort of fix some things, change some things. I'm not always ready to do that, but I have to keep working towards that, you know, to become a better man, to become more of a spiritual being, or I'm going to drink again. And then I like where it says here, we found that it is fatal, so there's two. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. It says, for when harboring such feelings, harboring, and what does that mean? Nurture and safe. I bring those feelings right to me. It doesn't say that I can't have resentments. It says when I'm harboring, when I'm building them up, when I'm making them just these wonderful things, I'm keeping them safe within myself, I'm nurturing them, making them bigger and bigger, then I'm going to die. Okay. And why is that? Because the insanity of alcohol returns, and I drink. And when I drink, I get crazy, and I want to go play bumper cars on 264. And hopefully, you know, it's not your children or your wife that's in that car, but those are just things I do when I drink. I like how you said that about the grouch and the brainstorm. I have it written here, you know, that the grouch, that's the slow burn, the slow one that I just like, and I slowly feed it, that resentment. And then there's the brainstorm where I just fly off the handle and I scream and a little vein in the side of my neck starts pulsating, and, you know, and I'm not supposed to be doing that. Those are the dubious luxury of normal men, and I'm not normal. But for the alcoholic, these things were poison. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you. We're going to continue on 66. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than we could alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Debbie?
All right, so the solution. Yeah, I don't want to look at it at an entirely different angle. So, you know, to me, this is really a big time where the psychic change that this book talks about happens. I have to look at it from an entirely different angle, or I will always be a victim. And I have heard that victims never recover, and I believe that. And so, I can't get me a psychic change. You know, I can't steal your psychic change. I can't steal your spirituality. So it's kind of God's ball here. But what I have to do, again, is stop fighting and just have even a fraction of whatever the smallest measurement is in my head of willingness to say, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got this all wrong. Maybe there's something out there that I'm missing. Maybe that there's a power out there that could help me. you know, and this fancied or real that have the power to kill. I can be mad at you and you don't even know it, probably didn't even do what I thought you did, and it doesn't matter. It's still just as powerful in my head, no matter what the circumstances were. But this entirely different angle, we could not wish them away any more than alcohol. So you're telling me these things are going to kill me 7 times and I can't do anything about it. Well, a self-reliant person, that I'm pretty much sunk here. I'm at the end of the road. And so I love, there's a speaker that a lot of us listen to, and he has a story about this next paragraph. This was our course, you know, this was our course. The people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. What people? Well, he says that's column one. Anybody, anything, any principle, that's it. Those are the spiritually sick ones who really should be making amends to us if we are honest. So, though we did not like their symptoms, what symptoms? That's column two. So I'm mad at you. This is why I'm mad at you. And the way they disturbed us, what's that? Column three, my pocketbook, my self-esteem, my fear, my pride, whatever it is, my personal relationships. They disturb us. They like ourselves. So I'm a sickie too. We're sick too. So in case you haven't heard and you're new, anytime in the book they say we ask God, that's a prayer. And so the rest of this is a prayer about what I do with every person on that list, because the only way I'm going to look at this from an entirely different angle, if I have to set aside what I got going on in my head, that slow burn, that brainstorm, that whatever it is, and I have to say this prayer that, you know, grant me some patience, grant me some love and tolerance for this person, save me from being angry, thy will be done, because I can't do it. I can't stop the anger on my own, and that's been my problem all along. I want to run the show. I want to say, I'm okay. I'm not mad anymore, you know. And then that slow burn. Oh yeah, it's going. And so I need tolerance, pity, and patience that I would grant a sick friend. And I have to do this with every person on the list before I can get that psychic change, that entirely different way of looking at this, to see what my fault is in this. Where am I broken? Because see, that's the other thing about principles. Principles for me, because I couldn't really wrap my head around what are they talking about principles. For me, principles are values and beliefs that I live my entire life on. And the principles, I then have other actions that I build on that principle. So principle is really a foundation. And so instead of having a higher power as my foundation, I have these broken principles, these wrong principles, these untrue principles. So it's a pretty shaky foundation, so that when you get to this point and you say, okay, I can't do this, I need to find this power, it always goes back to that step one problem, you know. And so when I finally get that psychic change of just a tiny bit of willingness to say, maybe I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, amazing things happen. And you can see it in people when you sponsor people and you're doing this step and you're thinking, she's never gonna get it. You know, she's never gonna get out of that column two. And then all of a sudden, not always all of a sudden, over time sometimes, but you see it. You see it happen. And that is what makes me believe that there's a power greater than myself, because I see what they come in with, and I see in myself what I come in with, what I bring to the table, and then what I'm able to do in relationships in my life. And I don't always want to do it, and I'm able to do it because I have a power that is not my self-reliance that's helping me do these things to be loving, patient, tolerant, and kind. Not what I brought to the show when I came in, you know. And then the avoid retaliation and argument, because that's always my go-to. I love to fight. I never debated, but because I really want to be vicious, and that's the truth. That's why I can't do the sarcasm. That's been a big prayer this week, because every answer to everything that was not hitting me was, I came up quick with them this week, but I didn't say them. And that's what willingness looks like in my life. It's not like all of a sudden, oh, I'm spiritual and I've got a halo and I'm good. What willingness looks like usually is doing the opposite of what I want to do. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie.
We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. Alright, so I guess if I don't find the key, I don't have a future. That sucks. So we got a 7 kill rate, and if I don't find this key, I ain't got no future. This is a hell of a page right here. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And that was something, I had an incident that happened in sobriety, and that was something that my sponsor really got about is, you know, like I was saying, am I capable of doing these things to other people that were done to me? Yes. I'm a liar, a cheater, a thief. I'm very capable of doing all those things. And that was the different angle when I could see it like that. And where I can then, even on top of that, like Debbie was saying, you know, how I said already that I found out already in that page that my problems are of my own making. Somewhere I started the ball rolling that made this incident happen. And the second I saw that, my whole world started to change. It is the craziest thing. And that the psychic experience, whatever you want to call it, started to set forth. Because I remember that, I remember this one time, I was with this guy, and he just got out of doing like 11 years in prison on like 11 year sentence. So he wasn't being a very good prisoner while he was there. He did all his time. He did the whole thing, and he gets out, and he came into contact with me, and me and him hung out, and I was helping him get a job, and we were on a computer, and we were filling out this survey for the job. It was just testing, like seeing your personality. And I was asking him the questions, and he would answer them. And like for me, I know this doesn't sound that profound, but for me it was pretty profound. It asked me a question. It said, do you think most people in the world are trying to do good? And like that, I was like, yes. No. 6 years ago, that would not have come out instantly yes. It would have been like, hell no. Every man for himself. I'm going to get mine before you get yours, and it's me against the world. And I truly believe these things in my heart. They were truths to me. But by taking these actions, going through this fourth step, I see that there is good in most people. Most people are trying to do good. And then when they do wrong, they suffer from the same thing I do. And that's selfishness. And so for me, that's where the different angle really played a part, and I understand that that was the key to my future. If I keep seeing the world like that, where everybody's against me, where nothing's my fault, where you don't understand, this happened to me when I was a kid, you don't understand, you don't, and that just leads me to go and do whatever the hell I want on this earth, I do not get any better. And I totally know what Debbie's saying. When you're with someone and they're on their second column, you're like, God, please let them be able to do the third, the fourth. Please, God. Because if I can't do it, it's a waste of my time. I just wasted ink. I just wasted paper. And I wasted my time. Because if I can't get that turn, that key, what's the point? I like the little prayer here. This was our course. We realized people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. I come to find out I'm spiritually sick, so they're just like me. That's pretty much it. Deb, you really covered that one. Thanks.
We're going to finish up on 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Through those situations had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. Debbie?
Yeah, so here's where the freedom is, although, you know, we fight it, or I fight it. But when I can just not even look at whatever column 1, 2, and 3 says, it's, you know, I know that I'm dealing with that issue, but I'm not even reliving it, rehashing it, any of it. I'm just looking at what did I do to set that ball rolling. There's always an answer. There's always an answer there. And so you'll hear these four words over and over and over again. Where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid? You know, I believe selfishness is the root of my disease, you know, and that is why when you do something wrong to me, the world should acknowledge that, you know, because I am the center. And truly, that's pretty much how I came into this program. I thought there was probably a God or something out there running the universe, but he didn't have anything to do with me, and I didn't have anything to do with him. And I really thought, I should run my world, you should run yours, and we'll just collide and bounce off of each other. And there was no, you know, organization. So it's fend for yourself kind of world. And so now I have this loving God that just keeps me protected. You know, it talks about it later in the book. I'm safe and protected. But so I'm putting out the wrongs of others, and what I'm trying to get to is that one word, those two words, those three words of what is it? What are my faults? And I've listed many of them. I'm sarcastic. I judge you. I'm better than you or less than you. I'm never equal to you. I have conditions on love. I don't want to practice unconditional love. You know, I isolate in a room this big with this many people. I can isolate. I could do it in the bar. I can do it here. You know. And so I put up those walls and I block that sunlight. And so what this is about is tearing those walls down or allowing them to be torn down. And so I list them. And it's funny, December is not my favorite month for a lot of reasons. And when we were talking last Saturday about, you know, oh, and it's December. And it's like, how long are you going to carry that sack of rocks? You know, because I've got, oh my God, this happened in 1985, and this happened in 1991, and I've just like carry them. And it's like, just, you know, there's a book, Drop the Rock. But anyway, you know, it's fun to carry that bag sometimes, you know, you can just get a lot of looks like, you know, what you got in the bag. And so, anyway, we list our faults, and we're willing to set the matter straight. And the reason I keep harping on this one word or two words or whatever, I didn't get this for a long time. Because, see, when you play God, you don't really need 6 and 7 because you can go right to 8 and 9. Now, that's wrong. That's wrong for the new people, but that's what I did for a lot of years. I just skip over 6 and 7 because I can fix it. I see the problem now. I can fix it. I can go make amends. And so why I need that one word is in 6 and 7, when I'm asking God to remove my defects of character, I need to know what they're called. I need to know, please remove my sarcasm. Please remove my judging of other people. Please remove my isolation and, you know, whatever it is that I have identified in that column, because that's where the magic happens. And I didn't skip them. I mean, I say the 7th step prayer, but it's like pretty generic, you know. I never rewrote that one like I did the 3rd step prayer where it meant something to me. And so that's why I really, really think it's so important to know, what is it? What is it? Am I selfish? Am I afraid? Am I dishonest? Or what is it in your own life? And that's why you can't steal somebody else's, because you have to do the work yourself. And I'm lazy. I don't want to do that. This is going to hurt. You know, I don't like pain. I can't numb it. You know, I just have to do it. You know, that's what they say. Just pick up the paper and the pen. And the whole thing about the black and white, it wasn't my idea. I heard it on a speaker, but he did make all of his guys get a black notebook and white paper and a black pen. I'm kind of colorful. I got a green pen going here right now. Thanks.
Thanks, Debbie. There's one thing I wanted to hit upon. I've always, my girlfriend always jokes with me about this, but I always said, you know, it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And so, you know, when it says here, you know, we cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. So from that, I always get that, like, this, the prayer becomes before that. God's not going to show me how to take a kindly, tolerant view of you if I still hate you. If I can't stand you, I just want you to die. God is not going to show me that. So I have this prayer first, so I can stop the hatred. I can bring that down. And then God's going to give me that. You know, I love, this book is just designed so perfectly. Like, they don't miss nothing. And then, I always got to remember that God's the one that's going to show me. I ain't going to show myself. I like here, you know, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done. We resolutely looked for our own mistake. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. That's my whole life now. I get to walk around this world. I get how many pages? 69, 84, 86, 88, 145. That's just a few that are going to ask me these questions over and over and over and over again. Because that's how I run. That's how I run. I run selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. You know, again, the book is going to say when these things crop up, because that's how I run. That is my, that's it right there. And so, you know, this is my first taste of it, but it never ends. Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Entirely, entirely. It said twice. Not like a little bit. Entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white, admitted our wrongs honestly, and were willing to set these matters straight. So, first thing is, like, don't get rid of your fourth step, because, like, you're gonna have to set these matters straight. That's pretty important. I remember when I took the steps the first time, there was some I was going through with my sponsor, and I was like, man, I want to do my eighth step. And he's like, well, you know, you're going to have to sit down and write these things. And I went and told my sponsor that. And he's like, what, a guy who never read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous? We don't write nothing. It was already written in your fourth step. We already have it. We just need to go through for the actions you're going to take. And so, you know, I did write that, and, you know, and I did see my faults, and now I'm going to go and set these things straight. My mistakes. With that, I don't know, I think you covered that one too pretty well. I don't see anything else. Yeah, like I was saying though, the whole forgiveness thing, I did it right in here. I heard someone say it once. Mercy for me, justice for everybody else. And I love that. Like, I want to get that tattooed on my back. Mercy for me, justice for you cats. And I remember that. And that's exactly how I run. And you know, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't. It's either going to be mercy for all of us or justice for all of us. And I can't. The things that I've done, I don't want justice. So hopefully we all can get some of God's grace and God's mercy. And thanks for having me here tonight. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And if we could just, that was awesome, guys. Thank you. Can we put our hands together? Together and Patrick. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to go ahead and pass the seventh tradition basket. And if I can have a home group member. All right. So the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contributions is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And right now I'll open up the floor for any AA-related announcements. Yeah, in the back.
My name's Melissa,
I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Melissa.
Anybody else? All right. So Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Can home group members please raise your hands? Awesome. All right. So newcomers, we meet for you guys. You know, you're a big part of our own recovery. And we'd like to just make you feel welcome by, if you give us your first name, we'd like to just welcome you right now. Is anybody in their first 30 days here with us? Yeah.
Hey, what's up, John?
John Paul. Welcome.
Welcome, man. Okay.
Hey,
Bree, welcome.
Hey, Jody, welcome.
Anybody else? All right. So we have a literature table way over there, and if you want any, the books are free. The books. It's a free for all. Take it. The books are actually at cost, and you can grab any home group member who will help you out with that. And the pamphlets are free. If you can bend it, you can take it. So, and that goes for big books too. If you mail one of those, have it. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you not to delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have two home group members that are going to be up here at the table. We have Jill and Jason who are going to be up here, man and woman, that will answer any questions you have about sponsorship. So please come up here and ask them anything you have. And in closing, we ask the group once again to thank our panel for sharing. And we thank all who participated. After cleanup, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. You are all welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which is held at this beautiful little pancake restaurant. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's Creeps. International. Creeps. And it's a house of pancakes. And you can actually get things other than pancakes. And we'd love to have you out. We always have a good time, and fellowship saved my life in the beginning. So that will happen at IHOP. So we'll have a volunteer who will read the last two paragraphs on page 164. David, nice.
All right, we're going to have an alcoholic named David.
Hey, David.
Our book is meant to be suggestive. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. Obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand him. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
All right, so here we close with the Lord's Prayer.
Oh, sorry, Patrick.
It's literally worked out resilience.
Was it me?
Yes.
I was the reason it worked it out.
Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.